Okay, welcome back everyone to our Daf a Week Shir. We are doing officially Daf Chaf Aleph, but we are on Chaf Amud Beis. As we said, we're sort of in this weird holding pattern of we get to like halfway through of the Amud Beis, and we have several pretty large Dapim coming up. So maybe we'll not cover as much ground, just in order again to keep the Shir relatively short length, which is somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes, which is what we've liked doing. And to try to make sure we coherently explain what's going on. We have a lot of interesting Gemaras, a lot of interesting stories that we're going to learn today. So I said we're on Chaf Amud Beis, and we are three lines into the wide lines on Chaf Amud Beis on 20b. So by the words, V'chein ir sheish ba dever o mapolis. So you remember that we're still working on this Mishnah that we had, I believe, at the beginning of the Perek. And this Mishnah dealt with all these other terrible things that happen, and what the response would be whenever there's another terrible thing that happens. So we know that we have these three fasts, seven fasts, whenever it didn't rain, when it was supposed to rain. But we have other responses that to other atrocities that take place, and then the Mishnah goes on to list many of those things. So this is one of those things. V'chein ir sheish ba dever o mapolos. Similarly, when you have a city that has a dever, has a plague, it has a some sort of a pestilence, some sort of a right, we know dever was one of the makos in Mitzrayim, so whatever is some sort of pestilence, some sort of terrible bug or that happens that kills people, a virus, if you will, o mapolos, or some sort of a crumbling building or some sort of crumbling wall, which usually means like we have winds that are so strong, like a tornado, that it's knocking down walls. So that's what the Mishnah was talking about. Says the Gemara as follows, four lines into the wide lines. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis Tana Rabbanan, Mapolas Shamru, this falling building that they were talking about, Brios Velo Ru'uos, She'inan Ru'uyos Lipol, Velo Haru'uyos Lipol. So says the Gemara, what are these things? So there are sturdy walls, and then there are like ru'uos, which are like dilapidated walls. They're like really like falling apart walls. Then there are walls she'ina ru'uos lipol that are not fitting to fall, and then there are walls v'lo haru'uos lipol that. There are those that are not fitting to fall, and then there are those below that are not fitting and that they will fall. So says the Gemara, these are the two categories that we have here. If it's a dilapidated wall and it's a wall that is fitting to fall, then those are the categories that we're talking about when we say mapolis, that is something that falls, and then there are the categories of sturdy walls, and then and those that are not fitting to fall. So says the Gemara, Hai Nihu, why do we have two of these categories listed? Why not just say either dilapidated walls, or say that walls that are not fitting to that are fitting to fall? It's the same thing. So says the Gemara, no, it's not actually the same thing, because Brios Hai Nihu, She'inan Ru'uyos Lipol. When you have healthy, sturdy walls, so that they are not fitting to fall. Hainihu ru'uos lipol. And when you have dilapidated walls, these are walls that are fitting to fall. So why do you have to be redundant over here? Just say either dilapidated, or say fitting to fall, or say sturdy and not fitting to fall. You don't have to give two categories over here. So it says the Gemara, lo. Sricha, no, we do need the second category. Really, we sounds like we're only questioning the second category, because the first one I understand. Sturdy and dilapidated, I get. That's the good quality. But then why do you need to add the extra thing of fitting to fall and not fitting to fall? So says the Gemara, we needed to give that second category. Why? Because the naflu machmas guvhaihu, that's for the walls that fall because of their height. Meaning what? So you have walls that fall because of their height, so that you could have a very healthy, nice, sturdy wall that falls because of its height. That's not a dilapidated wall. Why doesn't it fall? Because it's why does it fall? Because it is fitting to fall. So it fits into the second category, but not into the first category. Inami, alternatively, the kaiman aguda de nahara ki hahi ashita ru'ua de havai ben hardea. Right? We have walls that are situated next to or along a river. And these walls are naturally a little bit less sturdy, like we have the dilapidated walls in Nahar Daya, right? So these walls, Dinahara, right? So another example of a case of a wall that is sturdy in theory, but that it is fitting to fall, are the walls that are along the river, because again, the water naturally will get at its roots and it will cause it to crumble, but it could be in theory a sturdy wall. So that's why we have the second category, because that is a sturdy wall that still is fitting to fall. Okay, ki hahi ashisa ru'ua dehavai ben hardeya. So there was this dilapidated wall in Nahardea, Delo have a chalif Rabu Shmuel Tuta, that Rav and Shmuel will not want to walk underneath it. They wouldn't want to walk underneath it. They wouldn't want to walk along next to it, whatever it is. They don't want to be near this wall ever, because this wall would fall on people, because they understand it's dilapidated, it's going to fall over. So they didn't want to be anywhere near this wall in Nahardea. Afagap de Kaima Ba'asra Tulesar Shanana, even though the wall was standing for 13 years, meaning so it was a dilapidated wall, but this was the opposite case. It was a dilapidated wall, but it was a wall that was not fitting to fall. Clearly it's not fitting to fall, because it hasn't fallen. So even though it was a dilapidated wall, and even though it had not fallen in 13 years, still they didn't want to walk next to it. Yom achad ikla Rav Ada Barahava lahasam. One day Rav Ada Barahava, he went to this place, next to this wall, and Amar le Shmuel Rav, and Shmuel says to Rav, Niti mar nakif, let's go around this wall. This guy, Rav Ada Barahava, you know, he's risking his life, seems like, he's walking next to this wall, but we're not, we don't want to do that, we don't want to risk our lives, so let's walk around this fellow and around this wall. Amar le lo tsrichna ha'ina diika Rav Ada Barahava. So we're going to have this fascinating story and this fascinating fact about Rav Ada Barahava. Evidently, Rav Ada Barahava was someone who had such a zechuyos, he had such merits in his life, that as a result of his merits, he didn't have to worry about the walls that were falling over. He knew that he'd be saved, everyone knew that he would be saved. So says Rav back to Shmuel, we don't need to move today, we can go right next to this wall, because we have Rav Ada Barahava, Behadan de Nafesh Zuchute, and because of his great merit, we will be totally okay, we don't have to worry about this wall. Velo Mastapina, we don't have to be afraid of this wall falling. Rav Huna Havaleha Hu Chamra, Behahu Bita Ri'ya. So evidently Rav Huna, he had some wine in a house that was like dilapidated. Again, it was a sturdy, not sturdy house that was falling apart. Ubai Pnuya, but what do you know? He had all this wine. He needed to get it out, so he needed to take this wine out. So Aile Rav Ada Barahava Lahasam. So he brought Rav Ada Barahava there. He says, "I have a great idea. I need to get the wine from this house. I can't go in the house because evidently he didn't have the zechuyot to be saved from this house." So he said, "I'm going to get the guy. Everyone knows this great Rav Ada Barahava. He will save me. So I'll get him and I'll bring him to here so that I can take everything out." Mashche b'shamata ad de pnia. So he engaged him in like a Torah learning. They were having like a they were hacking in some Torah, and he did this. He had this conversation with him until he came out of the house with all the wine. Basar de nafak, he went out. Nafal besa, and the after. So who was this? So Rav Huna left the house, took all the wine out. Then Rav Ada Barahava left the house, and then Nafal besa. Then the house fell. Argish Rav Ada Barahava. So Rav Ada Barahava, he was like, he like realized what had happened. Now he said, "Oh my gosh, it's clear that Rav Huna was just using me. He knew that I would get merit, that in my merit he would not be harmed, and that's why he brought me over here. He wasn't really to talk in Torah. It was that he knew he would learn me here with some Torah. But really, this ended up just being an opportunity for him to save his wine. Ikpat. So he got really like offended. He was like, "Is this a joke? Like I'm Rav Ada Barahava. I mean, he wasn't a guy with the guy, but you don't just waste my time. You don't just take my merit for your own use as a trickery. Maybe you could have said that, please, I need your help, but don't trick me into doing it." Sabar laki had amar Rabbi Yana. He like reasons according to that which Rabbi Yana said. Li'olam al yamod adam b'makom sakana v'yomar osin li nes shema inosin lo nes, because he was holding like Rabbi Yana. What did Rabbi Yana say? He said a person should never stand in a place of sakana, in a place of danger, and he should say that God will do miracles for me. Why? Because shema inosin lo nes, because maybe a miracle will not be done for him. And that's what Rav Huna did over here. Again, Rav Huna is not some just Joe Shmuel. Rav Huna is Rav Huna, but he was really upset because Rav Huna shouldn't have done this. He shouldn't have relied on a miracle. But says Rabbi Yanai further, Vim Tim Se Lomar Osin Lo Nis, and if you will say no, we know that God's going to do a nis for me, Menachem Lo Mizuchiyosav. Still, because of the miracle that we know is inevitably going to happen, again, I guess you could evidently at some point say that there are some miracles that are inevitable. So Menachem Lo Mizuchiyosav, because of the miracle, you will certainly have some of your merits deducted from you. So again, it's weird when the Gemara says these things, because we can't really conceptualize it, but it gives us some ability to conceptualize meaning. So let's say like some person has 100 mitzvot under their belt, so that's the amount of zechuyos, that's the amount of merits they have 100 points, and okay, so he wouldn't necessarily want to waste his merits on X, Y, and Z, but because he was tricked into coming here, Rav Ada Barahava lost 30 points in Shemayim, because he lost some of his merit, because he was saved, even though he didn't know that that's what was happening, because Rav Huna was saved, that's what could happen. So even if you know a miracle will happen, still you'll lose some of your merits. Amar Rav Chanan, Mikra. So Rav Chanan said, so what's the pasuk that proves this idea? This idea that you'll be deducted from your merits if you have a nes done for you. Tichtif katanti mikol chasadim mikol ha'emes. Right, Yaakov Avinu said the famous line that I've been like diminished. I made small as a result of all the kindness and the truth. Meaning, because of all these good things that have happened to me, I've lost some merits in life because I got so much good. Which means it has to be some sort of equation here. So therefore, part of my merits were taken away as a result. My hava uvde de Rav Adabar Ahava. So what did Rav Adabar Ahava do? Like, what made him so great that everyone knew that he was the guy to call if you didn't want to be harmed from a falling building or from a falling house? Ki had itmar. It's as it was stated. Shalu talmidav l'Rav Adabar Ahava. Excuse me. That the students asked Rav Adabar Ahava, why have your days been lengthened? So we're going to have a whole list of, wow, these amazing things that Rav Adabar Ahava did that made him so worthy of always being saved from these situations. And then in particular, this question of why he had lengthened days, which I guess you could read it in multiple ways. Number one, he had lengthened days that maybe he lived to a ripe old age. But number two, that it sounds like he probably found himself in many dangerous situations, many times where a building should have fallen on him, but still he ended up to live to tell the tale. So what did he do that made his life longer? So he says, "Miyamai lo hikparati b'toch beiti." He said, "I have never showed anger inside of my house," meaning he was so careful to never be angry. We know that Chazal were very anti-anger. That the Rishonim talk tremendous about this as well. The Rambam talks about it, that having anger is such a terrible attribute that if someone finds himself to be an angry person, they should try to counteract it and work against that to eliminate that trait from their life. Because again, you could be born with such a trait, but try to get away from that. So he never showed anger in his house, which means that if your house is where you feel safe and everything's private, so if you never show anger in your house, certainly you're not going to show anger outside. So that's how great he was. He never showed anger inside of his house. And he would never walk. I would never walk in front of someone who's greater than me. And when I would walk down like these dirty alleyways, I would never have any sort of Torah thoughts. We know you're in like a disgusting place, like a bathroom, for example. One shouldn't be thinking about Torah at all. So whenever he was in a dirty alley where it was like, you shouldn't really be thinking about Torah, he was very makbid to make sure I am not thinking about Torah. Below Alachti Dalad Amos, below Torah, below Tefillin. Wow, this is unbelievable. I never walked more than 4 Amos without learning some Torah and without wearing Tefillin. It sounds like both of them at the same time. Below Yashanti Bebeis Hamedrash, Loshinas Keva, Loshinas Araya. I never slept in a Beis Medrash. It's an unbelievable thing. We'll say for all of us, wow, many, we're pretty good. Because most of us don't sleep in a Beis Medrash. Well, that's because most of us have not spent as much time in the Beis Medrash as Rav Adabar Ahava did. Rav Adabar Ahava was in tremendous Talmid Chacham and spent most of his day in the Beis Medrash, but he never slept in the Beis Medrash, not like a fixed sleep or not like a temporary sleep, so meaning like a short nap or like a few hours. He never would do that. Below Sasti B'Takalas Chavirai, and whenever any of my friends would fall or stumble, I would never rejoice in those things. Below Karati L'Chavirai B'Hachinato. And this is an interesting one. The Rambam talks about this one as well, that I never called my friend by his nickname. So evidently there's this idea that nicknames are not so nice, they're not so appreciated. So it seems like at the end of the day, probably if you have a nickname that's it's just what you like to be called, then it probably is okay to do that. We're talking about someone who is like, you know, someone with glasses, you call them Four Eyes. Obviously they don't like that nickname, you call that person Four Eyes. So that seems to for sure be the case. That's what we're talking about. Again, maybe there is what to say that even if the person does like the nickname, you shouldn't use a nickname. But whatever it is, he never called his friends by their nickname. But Amrei Lan, some say Bachanichto. It's not Bachanito, it's Bachanichto, meaning that he never called his friends by their surname, meaning like someone had like a really bad surname, so he would never call his friends by his surname if it was like a really bad one. Amar Lai, okay, fine. Now, so that was what made Rav Adabar Ahava so great. That's what made him so worthy of having such great merit that he would never have anything fall on him if he was inside one of these terrible, dilapidated buildings. Amar Lai Rav Rafram Bar Papa. Rava said to Rafram Bar Papa, Le Malan, Mar Mahani Mile Ma'aliyata Dehava Avid Rav Huna. He says, tell us some of the great things tell us, Master, Mahani Mili Ma'aliyasa, tell us some great things that Hava Avid Rav Huna, tell us some great things that Rav Huna used to do. Meaning, so You remember, we quoted a story of Rav Huna and Rav Adda Bar Ahava, how Rav Huna seemed to have used, quote-unquote, Rav Adda Bar Ahava, but the point is that Rav Adda Bar Ahava was a great person, but Rav Huna was also Rav Huna. Rav Huna was Rav Huna. And so tell us some of the great things that Rav Huna used to do. Amalei bian kusei lo dakirna. I don't remember really anything from his childhood. It's just, I don't remember anything. Besi vote Dekirna, but I remember stuff from his old age. What does he remember? Dekol yoma de'iva havu mafkin le begoharka de'dahava, that every single cloudy day they would carry him in like some sort of golden chair, visir le la lekula masa, and he would like inspect the entire city. Bekol ashisa de'havas Re'i'asa, have a susserla, and any sort of like wall that was like dilapidated, he would destroy. E'ef Sharla Mara Banela, and if the wall that he destroyed, which again, the reason why this was such a special thing that he did was because he's basically saving lives. Again, nowadays it's not so relevant because for the most part in the world, in the communities that we live in, we don't really find so many walls that are collapsing. Probably because most of the stuff that we're living near is relatively new in comparison to what some of the ancient stuff is, right? It's not hundreds of years old. Most of the stuff that we're walking around is, I don't know, anywhere between 20 and 100 usually max. So that's what we're that's you know, it's a little bit hard to put ourselves in this mentality, but there was this world that they lived in at one point where things could fall right and left. So he used to go around every single time it was a cloudy day. Why was it such a big deal that he would do this on a cloudy day? Well, it seems because that's when all the things would fall. If it was a terrible storm, that's when most of the terrible walls would fall. So he would go around in this very fancy golden bed or whatever, and they'd carry him around, and he would inspect, and anytime he would see a wall that was like, it looked like it was really not doing well, he destroyed that. EF Shalamara Banila. And they said if it was possible for the person who owned this wall, right? It wasn't like he went into public property that the government has to pay for. No, he went into like everyone's house and he saw whose house is gonna collapse. So he says, if this guy whose wall I destroyed because it was clear that it was going to collapse, then he would make that guy pay for it. But, and this is really what the great chesed that he did, V'ilo Efshar Banila Ihu Medide. But he says, if he would find someone whose house or whose wall he destroyed because it was going to fall, and this person could not pay for it, then he would pay for it from his own funds, from his own money. What money? Well, evidently he was rich because he used to carry him around in some sort of golden bed, so he clearly had the money, and he would pay for it from his own money. The kol pania dema'ali shavta. Another thing that he used to do, that every single Erev Shabbos, every single Friday from like the afternoon on, have a mishadar Shlucha l'shuka. He would send a messenger to the shuk, to the market. The kol yarka to have a piyesh lhu l'ginai, and any sort of extra fruit or any sort of extra vegetables that were found in the hands of like the people who grew these vegetables. Zavinle v'shadile l'nahara. He would buy all the extra fruit. That's all the extra like produce. What an unbelievable thing! He would literally buy all the extra produce that was left. And what did he do with it? So he didn't eat it. He didn't feed it to other people. He threw it in the river. Unbelievable. Of Velesve Lanium. So says the Gemara, I don't understand. That's a great thing to do. Why don't he just give it to the poor people? He have all this extra food. Give it to poor people. Says no. Zimnen de samcha da tayu velo asu lemizban. He was concerned about doing that because let's say he did it whenever the opportunity came. So they only had extra produce every now and again. So he would always buy the produce whenever it was extra. So let's say he does it. He gives it to the poor people, and then you're going to find the poor people are going to wake up one day and say and just have expected it to come one Friday, but then it turns out that there wasn't any extra produce, so he wouldn't have bought it, and therefore, you know, all these poor people who are going to expect food from him, but it's not going to come. So because of that, they're not going to buy their own food. And as a result of that, they're not going to have any food for Shabbos on the Shabbos that it happens to be, where there was no extra produce for Rav Huna to have bought up. V'lishdaye l'behima. So he says, the Gemara says, I understand. So fine, he can't give them to the poor people because he's concerned they're always going to rely on it a little too much. But why not give it to animals at the very least? They're not going to have any expectations. No, kasar machal b'adam in machal in l'behima. Okay, so this is a very interesting line. Unclear if this is like a matter of halacha or like good advice or what it is. But he says, no, he held that we don't feed the food of people to animals and vice versa, right? We don't humans don't eat animal food and animals don't eat human food. So again, it's a little bit unclear. Is this like halacha or is this just like how he felt? But that's how he saw the world, and as a result, there was not an option to give it to animals. Below lizbane klal, so says the Gemara, okay, so he couldn't give it to poor people. He couldn't give it to animals. So why did he buy it? Just forget about it. He didn't have to buy it at all. No, says the Gemara, no. Nimseis machshilin latil lavo, because he's preventing the following situation from happening in the future. Ki hava le milsa da asusa, because I'm sorry. Because nimseis machshilin latil lavo, because what would happen? This would have created a chain of events if he would not have bought it. What would have happened? So if he did not buy the produce, then all these people who were coming to sell their produce at the market, they would say, okay, listen, we are businessmen, and so this week we sold 90% of our produce. So next week, what are they going to do? They're only going to bring 90%. Their 100% will only be the 90% they brought last week. So they brought X amount this past week. So now this coming week, they'll bring X minus 10%, because they know they'll only sell 90%. So now what's going to happen? This week, what do you know? There's a big influx of people because new people were in town, whatever. It's going to come to be that there's not going to be enough produce in the town. You can't have that. No, not enough produce from the people selling the grain, from the people selling the produce. That's not a good situation. So he says, I'm going to make sure that whenever they have extra, I'm going to buy the extra so that when the time comes, they will not bring less, which will then prevent people from having enough food for Shabbos. Okay. Another thing that he did, that he had some sort of a medicine that was evidently unavailable to the public. Imagine in today's terms, that he had the vaccine for COVID. No one else had it. He was the only one who had it, not accessible to the public. Have male kuza de maya, and so he would fill a jug with this medicine. Vitalile besefa de beta, and he would hang it in the door frame of his house. Va'amar kol debai lacy velishkol. It's like an interesting version of the Pesach Seder. He would come and he would say, anyone who needs can come and take from this medicine that I have hanging here. That's another great thing that he did. Vikadamre milsa de shivta hava gemir. Another possibility of what he did, and so it's a little unclear if this group is adding, if the following is an addition to what he did previously, that's some hold of the following, or if it's a replacement of the following, but either or, it sounds like probably, I'm not sure, I think it could go either way. Vikadamre milsa de shivta hava gemir. So he knew the ways of the demon Shifta. So evidently there used to be a demon, or maybe there is still a demon, I don't know, a demon that was called Shifta, and he knew the ways of this certain demon. V'hava manach kuza demaya v'dalile v'amra kol ditzrich leisei v'leol delol v'stakin. Who was this demon Shifta, and what did he like to do? He used to prey on people who would not wash their hands properly, or who would not wash their hands at all, for food. And people that would do that, the reason why they weren't washing their hands for food usually is because they had a lack of water. And if you have this lack of water, then this demon is going to attack you. So what did he say? Rav Huna said, oh, I got it. I'm going to make sure that no one's going to be hurt, because he did have money. So he always made sure to have money. He always made sure to have water hanging from his door frame, from his door in front of his house, so that people could take it and they wouldn't come to be hurt by this demon. Ki have a krach rifta, when he would eat bread, have a petach lebave, he would open his door. Ve'amar koman ditzarech leisei v'lechol. Now this sounds a lot like Pesach. He would open up his door and say, anyone who wants to eat can come and eat with me. Amar Rava kuhu matzina makimna. Rava says, all of these things that Rav Huna used to do, I could do them too. They're not such great things. Okay, very nice, very special, but I could do them too. Lebar maha, except for the last one. The last one is too hard to say, that everyone could come and eat every single time I have a meal. Wow, that's incredible. Delo matzina lemeyaver mishum. Now we're on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Again, delo matzina lemeyaver mishum denafishe bnei chela de mechuza. Because evidently, Rava lived in this town called Mechuza, and the people who lived in Mechuza, there were a lot of poor people there. And if he would invite all the people who needed to eat every single time he sat down for a meal, literally, he wouldn't have any money or he wouldn't have any food left. So he says, Rava, I can never do this last thing, because in Mechuzah, it's just not doavable. But all the other things I could do. But anyways, Rav Huna and Rava were both very great people, and so that's what the Gemara says about the Rav Huna. Again, I think the whole point of bringing this is to show that Rav Huna was not some Joe Schmo. He too was a great guy, but evidently, he did make use of the merits of Rav Ada Bar Ahava in an interesting way that certainly Rav Ada Bar Ahava himself did not approve of. Okay, now the Gemara is going to spend a great deal of time speaking about these two individuals. Ilfa, who is not such a common name, we don't really know who that is, but Rabbi Yochanan, everyone knows who Rabbi Yochanan is, but evidently Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were hanging out. So let's see what the Gemara has to say. We're at the end of the top line of Chaf Aleph Amad Aleph. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan havu garsei b'oraisa. What happened, this was the following story that took place. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were learning Torah together. Dechika lehu milsa tuva. And they were in dire financial needs. They didn't have any money. They didn't have enough money for food, for water, who knows, whatever it was. They didn't have enough money. Amrei, they said to each other, Nikum v'nezel v'ne'avad iska. What any person would do in this situation, they got up and said, listen, we have to make a living over here. So let's put this learning aside. Learning is very nice. Learning is very important, but we can't learn for the rest of our lives. We have to make a parnasa, so we have to be able to support ourselves and our family. V'nekayim v'nefishin. And if we do this, if we now stop learning and get up and start making some money so we can support ourselves, we will fulfill in ourselves the following pasuk, which is Efes Kilo Yihye Becha Evyon, the pasuk in Devarim that says that among you there will be no destitute. That's it's a promise from Hashem, it seems, and they're saying that we're going to make sure we're not destitute. Well, how are we going to do that? Because we're going to go out and make some money. Okay, says the Gemara, Azlu Osve tute guda ri'ia. And what happened? They went and they sat next to a dilapidated wall. Havu ka karche rifta. While they were eating their bread, they sat next to this wall. Okay, so we know what's going to happen already. This doesn't sound very good, because we just learned in the previous Amud that it's not good to be next to a dilapidated wall. Asu tre malachi asharis. And what do you know? It happens to be two angels came along. Shame Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan heard them speaking. Damar chad l'chavrei. That one of them said to his friend, Nishte alayhu hai guda v'nektalinu. Let's knock down this wall and we'll kill both of them in one shot. How great would that be? Shamanichen chay olam haba v'oskin b'chay. So this sounds very pro Kolalim at this point. Why? Because why do the angels want to kill them? Because they said about them that they place the world to come aside so that they can be involved in matters of this world. Meaning they said we're going to stop learning so that they can go into business. Amar le idach shavkinu. The other angel then said back to his other angelic friend, he said, leave them alone, don't kill them. Wow, that's an unbelievable thing. Why? Zi'ika behu chad dekaima le shata. This is an unbelievable line. Because there is one among them whose hour is coming up. Meaning one of them is about to become big stuff. So don't do anything, because you're going to mess up the world if you take away this great person. Wow, so that's an unbelievable statement. Who is that angel talking about? Was he talking about Ilfa, or was he talking about Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan shema Ilfa, lo shema. So Rabbi Yochanan heard, and Ilfa did not hear this story. He did not hear what happened. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan Ilfa. Rabbi Yochanan said to Ilfa, shema mar midi. He says, did you hear something? Did you hear, Rabbi Yochanan's am I hearing voices? Did you hear the same conversation that I just heard between these two angels? Amar le lo. And Ilfa says back to Rabbi Yochanan, no, I have not heard anything. Amar midish shemai anav ilfa lo shema shema minal didi kaim alishata. So Rabbi Yochanan says, unbelievable, this is the origin story of Rabbi Yochanan. From the fact that Rabbi Yochanan, he said to himself that from the fact that I heard the angels and Ilfa did not hear from them, it must be, we see from here, that I am the one who is going to be the next big thing over here. And so therefore, therefore what happened? Amar le Rabbi Yochanan, Ihadar, Rabbi Yochanan said to him, I'm going back. I'm quitting this business. I can't go into business. I have to go into learning full time. V'oki b'nafshai ki lo yechtal evyon mikerev ha'aretz. It's unbelievable. He says, and I'm going to fulfill within myself the pasuk that says, pasuk in Devarim, the pasuk that says that the poor will never cease from the midst of the land. He says, that's the pasuk that's going to apply to me, because, okay, I won't have any money, but I money is not my thing. I have to learn Torah, because evidently I'm going to become the next big thing. Rabbi Yochanan hadar, Ilfa lo hadar. So Rabbi Yochanan went back to sit and learn, and Ilfa did not go back to sit and learn. Ada asa Ilfa, until all of a sudden one day Ilfa comes back. Wow. So what's going to be? Ilfa is evidently this wealthy businessman, and Rabbi Yochanan must be this big Torah giant. So Malich Rabbi Yochanan. So what happened when Ilfa had, by the time Ilfa came back, they had crowned Rabbi Yochanan. What does that mean, they crowned him? It means they made him the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva he was learning in. So wow, he really did become big stuff. Amru lo, they said to him, to who? To Ilfa, they said, I asiv mar vigaris lo hava malich mar. Says, if you would have come back, Ilfa, then you would have become the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Yochanan would not have become the Rosh Yeshiva, you would have become the Rosh Yeshiva. So again, so now it seems like it's a little unclear who was really the greater one. Was it Ilfa or Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan assumed that he was the greater one, but perhaps Ilfa was evidently the greater one, because that's what they're saying. They're saying you would have become the Rosh Yeshiva, not Rabbi Yochanan. Azal tola nafshe ba'askaria disapinta. So what happened as a result of this? So he says, or rather, Ilfa went and he did something interesting. He balanced himself on like the mast of the ship. Okay, why did he do that? He's trying to make a point, trying to like show how confident he is in his Torah learning abilities, that they were greater than Rabbi Yochanan, or at least really of high caliber. The point that Ilfa is trying to make is that even though Rabbi Yochanan became this Torah giant and he's this big Rosh Yeshiva, that at the very least Ilfa is still a great Torah giant. How did he do this? So he said, I'm going to go stand over here, like, you know, like I'm not going to, like we had like a Choni HaMagal, Choni the Circle Maker. I'm going to stand in this circle until you answer me, Hashem. So Ilfa saying, I'm going to stand in this really uncomfortable place on the mast of the ship until I can prove to you how knowledgeable I truly am about Torah, even though I went into business. Amar, he said, so you need to know a little bit of background for this, about how the ancient writings of Chazal used to work. So there was something called the Mishnah. We know very well what the Mishnah is. The Mishnah is that which Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi compiled into all the halachic teachings that make up the magnum opus of the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. And then there were things called Braisos. Braisos or Braitot, depending if you want to say it in Ashkenazis or in Sfardit. Braisos are things, are teachings of the rabbis that did not make it into the Mishnah. That Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, no, they're not going to go into the Mishnah. And who codified the Braisos? Well, evidently there were several different people who might have codified them, but Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshaya were two of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and they compiled the version of Braisos, which was like the unquestioned. Everyone knows that there was the compilation of the Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and then his students put together the collection of Braisos, which are statements and teachings from the rabbis that did not make it into the Mishnah. So both the Mishnah and both the Braisos of Rabbi Yoshaya and Rabbi Chia are like they're like the definitive version. Those are the ones you want to go by. So what did he say? What did Ilfa say? Iika deshayel lib masnisa de Rabbi Chia v'Rabbi Yoshaya. He says, if there is someone who can ask me about the Braisos of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yoshaya, v'lo pashtina le mimasnisen, and I won't be able to give you their source and their connection to Mishnayos. In other words, it's a pretty hard thing to do to connect a Braisa to a Mishnah, because of the fact that Braisos are that which the Mishnah does not deal with. But he's going to say that no, they really are all connected, and you want to hear how great of a Torah giant I am? Give me any Braisa that was given over by Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yoshaya, and I'll tell you how it's connected to any other Mishnah in Shas. Okay, so Nafilna Me'askaria Disapinta V'Tavana. So he says, If someone can slug me up, if someone can make it that I trick me and fool me over here and I won't get it right, and he says, I'll allow myself to fall from the mast of the ship and I will drown. That's how confident I am that I'll be able to answer any of your questions to prove that I am a Torah giant still, even though I went into business. Asahahu Saba Tanale. And so there was a great elderly individual who went out to Ilfa when he was standing on the ship, and he quoted him the following brisa. Haomer Tanu Shekel Libanai Bishabis Vehin Ruyan Latit Lahem Sela Nosin Lahem Sela Vimamar Altenu Lahem Ela Shekel Enosin Lahem Ela Shekel Mamar Mesu Yarshu Achirim Tachtem Bain Shamar Tenu Bain Shamar Altenu Enosin Lahem Ela Shekel. Okay, so what's the price? So let's break it down very quickly. So this is very slowly. Rather, this is going to be totally unrelated to anything we've been talking about, because this price is just a random price that's meant to slug Ilfa up. So the price says as follows. themselves. Someone who passes away, and he has an arbiter, someone who is the owner of the estate, or in other words, what's the word, that he's overseeing the will, and he's making sure that everyone's getting all the right things. So he says this person who passed away told the guy who was supposed to divvy up the will. He gave him the following instructions. Three possibilities. One is that I said to him, give a shekel to my sons. Once a week, they should get one shekel once a week. And let's say that in this situation, when he said to give one shekel a week to my sons, that really they really need more than a shekel. They need a sela to live off of, a little bit more money. No simlahem sela. So says the Braisa, that the person who is overseeing the will over here, he is allowed to give the children a sela. It sounds like an interesting thing, because maybe you're going against what the person's request was, because he said to give them a shekel, and you're saying I'm going to give them a sela. But no, says the Braisa, that's okay, you're allowed to give them a sela. But the imamar altenu lehem, but if he said to this guy, don't give them anything except for a shekel, excuse me, then we only give them a shekel. We can't give them any more. But finally, a third case, if he said to this individual who's overseeing the will, that if they die, that others will inherit beneath them or from them. So then in that situation, since there are going to be other people that will get from this estate once they die, then whether or not he said to give them, or whether he's to give them only from the shekel, to give them from the shekel, or to not give them from anything but the shekel, then still we don't give them anything but a shekel. Why? Because in this situation as well, since there are people who are going to be inheriting it after them, that means whatever he said was meant for his sons was it regarding what was meant for his sons, because there are still people who are going to hopefully get it after them. So that for that reason, they are only going to get the minimum amount that he told them they can get. Okay, so all of that, if you didn't get that entirely, that's probably okay, because we're just trying to prove a point over here. Why? Because now the elderly individual quoted this braisa to Ilfa, and he said to Ilfa, Amarle, Hamani, he said, who taught this braisa? You're such an expert, Ilfa. I'm quoting you an anonymous braisa, and I want you to tell me from the Mishnayos who taught this braisa. So, Hamani, Rabbi Meir, he, without blinking an eye, Ilfa said it was Rabbi Meir that taught this braisa. Da'amar mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, because Rabbi Meir has a rule that he said in the Mishnayos that it's a mitzvah to fulfill the words of someone who passes away, someone who had a dying wish, then you have to fulfill their wish, and that is a mitzvah to do so. And that's how Ilfa proved this point, and the Gemara seems to stop talking about this at this point, and so it's a little unclear what the conclusion of the Gemara is. Was Ilfa as great as Rabbi Yochanan, and should he have been the one that should have stayed back to become the Rosh Yeshiva? Unclear, who knows? But the point is that Ilfa seemed to have still had some great level of Torah knowledge and some great level of Torah mastery, because he got this question right, and it seemed like this was one of the hardest questions you can ask. Okay, now the Gemara is going to have a discussion about Nachum Ish Gamzu. You remember Nachum Ish Gamzu? He's the one who had everything go not necessarily so well for him, but he always used to say Gamzu L'tova, that this too is for the best. Very famous because of that. Okay. Amru Alav al Nachum Ish Gamzu. They would say about Nachum Ish Gamzu, Shehaya Suma Mishtei Inav, that he was blind in both of his eyes. Gidam Mishtei Inav, both of his hands were missing. Kitai Mishtei Raglav, both of his feet were missing. They were cut off. The Kol Gufo Male Shchin, and his whole body was filled with boils. Vaya Mutal Bebes Re'ua, and he was sitting in like a dilapidated house. Veragle Mitaso Monichen Besfilen Shalmayim, and the feet of his bed were sitting in pails of water. Kadesh Shelo Yalu Alab Nemalim, so that the ants should not climb up the bed and then climb onto him. He doesn't have any hands or feet, so he couldn't swat them off with any. So that would be terribly uncomfortable. Pam achas haisa mitaso munechas bebeis re'ua. One time, when his house was placed in this dilapidated house, bikshu tamidav lefanos mitaso. The students of Nachum Ish Gamzu asked him if they could take him and his bed out of the house. V'achakach livnos hakilim, and then they'll take out the furniture as well. I guess maybe they wanted to move him somewhere else. So they said, we're going to take you out, and then we're going to take Then we're going to take the furniture out. Amar lehem banai panu es akilim. He said, first take off the furniture. V'achar kach panu es mitasi shamuvtach lechem kol zman sh'ani bebayis ein habayis nofel. He says an unbelievable statement. Nachum Mishkamza was a great man, but he knew exactly who he was. So he says, take the furniture out and then take me with my bed out of the house, because then you'll be assured that the house will stay sturdy and will stay standing as long as I'm in it. But if I'm not in it, then it's going to fall. So that's an unbelievable statement. He knew that through his merit, that's what kept the house from falling. Pinu es akilim. They took the kilim out. They took the furniture out. V'achakach pinu es meitaso. And then they took out his bed with him in it. V'nafala bayis. And then the house fell down. Amru lo tamidav. The student said to him, Rebbe, v'kim achar shesadik gamor ata lama alta lach kach. So they said to him, Rebbe, if you're such a great tzaddik, which clearly you're such a great tzaddik, because not only did you know that this was going to happen, but you knew that the house was being held up by Hashem because of your greatness. And so they wanted to know, Rebbe, how did you end up like this? How did you have no eyes? You're blind, no hands, no feet, boils all over. Why would you be like this if you're such a great man? So it's an interesting question, because they didn't think he was a tzaddik gemar before this, but like he was their Rebbe, and they didn't think he was a great person, but now they woke up and saw that he was. Okay, nonetheless, this was evidently a striking enough of an event that they had to just ask the question now. So Amar Lahmi says to them, yeah, you know what? Even though I'm such a great person, I ended up like this. Why? Banai ani garamti latzmi. I caused this all to myself. Shapam achas hayiti mahalich bederech lebeis chami. One time I was walking to my father-in-law's house. V'haya imi masoi gimel chamurim, and I had 3 donkey loads of food. Wow, that's a lot of food. Echad shal machal, one of food, v'echad shal meshtah, one of drink, v'echad shal minei migodim, and one of various delicacies. Wow, that's a lot of good stuff. Ba ani echad, and one poor person came along when he saw me walking. V'amadli, and he stood to next to me, baderech, on the way. V'amadli, Rebbe, parnasini, and he said to me, please, Rebbe, I'm so hungry, I haven't eaten in days, please feed me. Amar Tilo, I said to him, Himtin ad she'efrok minachamor. He says, okay, I'll do it. Just wait, let me unload my donkey, and then once I unload the donkeys, then I can give you some food. Then what happened? Lo espakti leprok minachamor. He did not finish unloading his donkey. Ad she yastan nishmaso, until this ani passed away. So in other words, he wasn't finished with the job. He wasn't finished with the delivery. He did not finish taking all the food off. And before he finished taking all the food off, again, before he could ever give the ani any food, this guy passed away. And seemingly the implication is that he passed away from starvation, meaning it was Nachum Mishkamzu is then going to blame himself because he should have fed him, because if he would have fed him 10 minutes earlier, maybe the guy never would have died. Halachti v'nafalti al panav. He says, Nachum Mishkamzu is speaking now. He says, I went and I fell on his face. V'amarti Eini shalo chasu alenecha yisumu. And I said, my eyes that did not have mercy on your eyes, they should become blinded. Yadai shalo chasu al yadecha yitgadmu. My hands that were not did not have mercy or pity on your hands, they should be cut off. Raglai shalo chasu al raglecha yitkatu. My feet that did not have mercy on your feet should be cut off. Velonit karara dati. And he says, my mind still couldn't rest. He said, I still felt horrible for what happened to this man, because he really blamed himself for this event. He said, until I said, God, fill my body with boils. Amrulo, they said to him, Oy lanu sher reinucha bekach. They say, woe unto us that we have seen you like this. Says back to him sharply, Amar lahem, Oy li, woe for me, imlo reituni bekach, if you would not have seen me like this. Meaning, if you would not have seen, if God would not have listened to my what I said, and God would not have punished me here, then it would have been terrible, because then that means that God would have been needed to give him the punishment, in the afterlife, and that would not have been good. So he is thankful that he got to have the punishment in this world. Okay, now the Gemara is going to want to know, well, how did he end up with the name Nachum Mishkamzu? I understand that this is a very long daf, so we'll hope to finish most of this amud and get through the top of the next page, but the next few lines should go pretty quickly. V'amai karulei Nachum Mishkamzu. Why did they call him Nachum Mishkamzu anyway? So how did he get that name? Because anytime something would happen, he would always say, Gam Zulatova, this is for the best. Zimna Chada, what's an example of this? Because one time, Ba'ul Shaduri Yisrael Doron Lebei Kizar, the Jews wanted to send to the court of the Caesar, they wanted to send a gift to the court of the Caesar. Amru Man Yaziel, they said, who should we send to give this gift? Yaziel Nachum Ish Gamzu, they said that we should send Nachum Ish Gamzu, to Malomed Ben Nisayonhu, because he is someone who is accustomed to accustomed to having miracles done for him. So in other words, if something bad would happen when he goes to see the Caesar, when he goes to see the king, the emperor, so then for sure God's used to doing miracles for him, so he'll be saved, and he was the most likely to be saved with any miracles. Shadru biyade male sifta da avanam tuvus margalios. So they sent with him like a chest that was filled with precious stones and pearls. Okay. Azal, he went, bat b'ahu dira, so he spent the night in a certain residence, and belelia kamu hanach diorai, and that night, all the residents of this place, or a whole bunch of the residents, got up, and they v'shaklinhu l'sifte umalunhu afra, they took all these precious stones and gems and whatever, and pearls, and they filled it up with dirt, ki, we'll skip the parentheses, ki mata hasam, when he traveled to the Caesar, to the palace of the Caesar, Sharinhu Lisifta Chazanhu de Malo Afra. They opened up this chest, so Nachum Ish Gamzu gets to the palace of the Roman emperor, the most powerful man in the world, and he opens up, and he says, I have a gift for the Caesar, and what do you know? They open it up, and they find that it's filled with dirt. They see clearly he's mocking the Caesar. Ba'a Malka L'Mektalinhu L'Kulu. And then the king said, I want to kill all of them. Who's all of them? I want to kill all of the Jews, because they're all mocking me with this horrible scene over here. Amar kam machichu bi Yehudai. He says, because he said that they are mocking me, the Jews are mocking me. Amar gamzu letova. So Nachum Ish Gamzu says, no, gamzu letova, this too is for the best. How? What could possibly be the best about this? Well, he had faith that God was going to take care of him, that none of this was his fault, and so God's going to take care of him. Asa Eliyahu came adame le kichad minayhu, and he appeared as if like he was one of the Romans, like one of the Roman emperor, one of the Roman like generals or people. Amar le, he said to him, I guess he said to the king, Dilma ha afra me afra da Avraham avuhunhu. Maybe this dirt is actually from Avraham, their forefather. Why would that be significant? Because whenever Avraham, so remember, Avraham was very famous for a lot of things, but one of the things that he did in his life was that he went to war with several kingdoms, seemingly by himself. So how did he win those wars? Because when he would throw the dirt, havu saife, it would turn into swords. Gile, and when he would throw the straw, havu giri, it would turn into arrows. Dechtiv, yitin ka'afar charvu kikash nidaf kashto, that he made his sword like the dirt, his bow like wind blown strong. Havia chada medinta lo matzu lemechbasha. So evidently there was this one state, there was this one country that the Romans were not able to conquer. They kept trying and trying, and they never conquered them. But kumine v'kifshua, they tested out this dirt. They said, you know what? What do we have to lose? We've never conquered this place. Let's try to conquer it. So they try to conquer it, and what did they use? They used the dirt that they got from Nachum Ish Gamzu. Ailu libei ginze. And umaluhu lesifte avanam tovos umargalios. And what do you know? The dirt worked. It ended up killing all of their enemies, and they conquered this country that they never been able to conquer because of this dirt that Nachum Ish Gamzu brought for them. So they decided to fill up their treasure. So they went up to the treasure vault and they filled up the chest with all these precious stones and gems and pearls, etc. Veshadruhu Biyikra Rabba, and they sent Nachum Ish Gamzu back to his community with great honor. They took him out of prison, out of the death chamber, and he said that I'm taking you. Then he sent it back with great honor. Ki asu beito behu diora. When they were coming home, so meaning Nachum Ish Gamzu with his whole chevra, when they were all coming home, they again spent the night in the same place. Amru lay, and they said to him, "My isis behadach." They said, "What did you bring the king that you ended up coming back with such splendor over here?" The avdi lecha yikra kulehai, that you got all this honor. Amru lay, he says to them, "My deshakli mehacha amte lahasam." This is whatever I brought here, whatever, when I, on my way, when I came here, I stopped here first. Whatever I brought here is what I brought there. Which meaning, you know, he knew what was going on. He saw clearly that they had taken his money. But he was playing around with them because they mocked him and he was saved. So therefore, Sitru Lidirihu, so they all destroyed their residence, meaning this big hotel, whatever that they had, they knocked it to the ground. The Amtinhu Lebe Malka, and they brought it to the king. Amru Lei, Hai Afra Da'isi Hacha Medidanhu. This dirt that you had previously that was brought to you by this man, Nachum Ish Gamzu, this is the dirt. This is all the rubble from our home. So this is all going to be of incredible use to you. Please honor us. But Kuha, Veloashka Kuha, what happened? The kingdom of the king, they checked after it. They picked up some dirt and said, oh, let's see if it turns into swords also. But what do you know? It did not turn into swords or it did not turn into to arrows. They katlinhu lahanachti yorai, and they therefore killed all of these people who tried to trick them because again, these were not good people, and they tried to have this big scheme over here because they said, oh, we didn't know this was a special dirt, and we see in retrospect it wasn't special dirt. It was that Nachum Ish Gamzu was used to having miracles because he always said Gamzu L'tova. One more series of lines over here, and then we'll stop for the night. Ezo hi dever ir hamotzia chamesh meos ragli. We said that, how do we define whenever there's a plague or whenever there's like a pestilence in a city? What defines if it's a pestilence? So he said, if you have a city that has 500 people, 500 like able-bodied men, and in that city, if you lose three individuals in three consecutive days, meaning one person a day, then you'll know that's a dever. Then you know that's a plague. So the Gemara is going to have another case like this. Tanur Rabbanan, Rabbi Tanur Rabbeisa, Ir Hamotzia Chamesh Meos Ve'Elef. You have a city that has 1,500 able-bodied men. Rugli Kigon Kfar Akko, like the city of Akko. V'Yatzu Heimana Tisha Meitim B'Shlosha Yamim, and you have 9 people die in 3 days. Ze Achar Ze Harei Ze Dever. You have 9 people die in 3 days. This one after that one, meaning you have 3 days, and over the course of each of those days, 3 people die. So on Monday they die, 3 people. On Tuesday, 3 people die. On Wednesday, 3 people die. Then you know that's dever. Then you know there's a pestilence, there's some sort of a plague that has come to your city. But if you have 9 people that die in 1 day, or 9 people that die in 4 days, ain't that dever. This is not going to be considered a plague. It's not going to be considered a pestilence. And now we have the case of our Mishnah, but this is a Braisa, a city that you have 500 able-bodied men in it, Kigon Kfar Amiko, like this place called Amiko. And you have 3 people that die in 3 days, 1 each day, 1 Monday, 1 Tuesday, 1 Wednesday. This is going to be considered a pestilence, this is going to be considered a plague. But if you have 3 people that die on 1 day, or 3 people that die over the course of 4 days, meaning 1 Monday, 1 Tuesday, and then 1 on Thursday, then that's not going to be considered a plague, that's not going to be considered a pestilence. Finally, Jerokras, Ir Hamutzia Chamesh Maos. You have this place called Jerokras, which was a city that had 500 able-bodied men. Hava v'yatz mimena shlosha meisim v'yom acharen. What do you know? You had this case of this from the Bryson. From the Bryce and from the Mishnah standpoint, seems like it wasn't a dever because you had 3 people that died in 1 day, which according to our current calculations, that would mean that that's not going to be considered dever. But what happened? Gazer Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista Tanisa. Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista said, no, we're going to have a fast because of this, because evidently it is a bad thing that's come to our city. I'm Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Keman. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, come on, so who is Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista holding like? Kriya Meir, he's holding like Rabbi Meir. The Amar Richak Negichusav Chayav, Ki Rav Negichusav Lo Kol Shekin. So this is unbelievable, but this is not, again, nothing to do with what our teaching is, but it's a relevant comparison, and that is the case of a ox that gores. When you have a case of an ox that gores, so we normally say that if he kills 3 people or 3 animals, whatever it is, in 3 days in a row, then it's considered a goring ox. So the Amar that he said, or the mayor said, that if you have a richak nigichusav chayav, that if the owner is liable to pay for a situation where the ox gored distantly from each time, so in other words, he gored 3 times over the course of 3 days, then the owner is going to be liable to pay in that situation. Then kirav negichusav, if he
kills three people close to one another, or kills three animals close to one another, meaning he kills them all in one day, lokoshikin is enough for sure that the owner should be liable to pay, and therefore that's where this reasoning comes from. If you have a plague, that if it's considered a plague, if you have three people die over the course of 3 days, then of course it's going to be considered a plague, again, against our Mishnah and against our Braisa, but of course it's going to be considered a plague if you have three people that die over the course of 1 day. If we consider it over the course of 3 days a plague, of course over the course of 1 day will also be a plague as well. So with that, I think we will stop right here, and God willing, next time we'll pick up from here. But everyone should have a great night, and God willing, we'll see you all next week.